What's up? This is the gentleman John Campbell coming to you live on location from Marquette, Michigan at the Masonic Temple. We are here today for Pro Wrestling Revolution, and my guest at this time is the one and only Brian Skyline. Brian has been in the business for a number of years, five, as he is signaling to me with his hand, and I'm glad to have him on here. And Brian, how you doing today?
I'm doing, John. How are we doing today? How's the write-up?
It was long.
Yeah, they usually are.
Yeah, it was long, and there wasn't really a lot to look at, so it was just kind of like, eh. But we're here, and we're going to make the most of it. So now, the first question, it seems, I always have to ask is, were you a fan of pro wrestling growing up?
Well, of course I was. I wasn't, like, initially, like, my dad or nothing didn't watch it when I was on TV, so I didn't grow up like that, you know, watching it. But way it kind of turned out is when I was about 7, 8 years old, my best friend at the time had moved away to Escanaba, Michigan, which is like a hour from where we grew up. And being 8 years old, that seemed like he moved across the country.
Yeah, for sure.
But when him and his mom finally came back to visit and stuff, he had another friend, and they were renting wrestling tapes from this place called Mr. Munchies in Escanaba.
And it's always awesome how you can remember, like, exactly stuff like that. Like, mine was J&J Video.
Right. It's weird how that works out. But anyways, because I still wanted to be my best friend because it was so important, because everything's so important when you're, 8 years old, and don't have the pubes yet or anything. So after, we watched them and stuff and went on this, that, the other thing, as soon as he left, I had to go to the video store and get tapes so I could watch and catch up to him, because they knew so much more about it than me, and I didn't want to be left behind.
Absolutely.
And as it turns out, he eventually grew out of it, and I became a professional wrestler, so.
Well, there you go. Now, do you keep in contact with him still?
Off and on, we run into each other, if we're in town at the same time during holidays and we're out and about.
But does he know that you're a wrestler?
I believe so, because we have mutual friends still and whatnot.
Okay, because I have friends like that. Like, I was a fan growing up, and I had friends when I was little that would watch it with me and stuff, and then they find out I'm a wrestler, and they think it's either the coolest thing in the world, or they're just like, grow up.
Yeah, if I could we're doing a voice podcast here, so you can't see the face, but we could give you a definite face when you tell people like that. Just like
like I drank sour milk, but I'm trying not to sell it, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
So growing up, fan of pro wrestling, do you remember, like, obviously your earliest memories of wrestling were, like, with your friends and everything, but growing up, was there ever that point where you wanted to be a wrestler? Was it something you always wanted to do since you first got into it, or was it something that came later on?
I'm really not sure how to answer that. I would say, yeah, it was from the start, because another thing was, too, is, like, I was a big fan of comic books, too, and, still am to this day. Go figure. But, it's like, I was a big Spider-Man fan, and I'm watching, Shawn Michaels and Mario Giannetti doing all this stuff. It's like, oh, my God, real human beings can do the stuff that Spider-Man can do.
Yeah, the real-life superheroes. That's kind of how I saw pro wrestling when I was that age.
So, initially, of course, when you're that age, of course you want to be a superhero. So, I would say, yeah, I wouldn't say I really started thinking about it until I was probably like 13 years old. And I think I got a book from the Monster Factory that they had, like, you send $5 to the Monster Factory, and King Kong Bundy and Larry Sharp would send you an autograph, like 5x7 in this booklet about what you're supposed to do on this, that, the other thing.
I always wanted to send away for that, but I never did. I bet if you still had that, it would be like a pretty good collector's item.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. I mean,
like, if you ever wanted to eBay that and make a quick buck.
Oh, God.
So you sent away for the Larry Sharp pamphlet, or like a pamphlet or a book or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And you read that, and, like, I don't know, because I never read it, but I imagine it exposed a little bit, but not, like, a ton.
Yeah, there wasn't, a lot of the terminology or anything like that, but kind of how independent wrestling actually works. At that time, PWI is how I first got exposed to independent wrestling. Guys like Al Snow, Devin Storm, Sabu, ECW was getting real hot at that time,
sure,
too. And, you know, so that's kind of how I was like, whoa, there's more than WWF and NWA, WCW. And
yeah.
It didn't seem like these guys winning all these titles. Like, whoa, because I'm, you know, I was a big sports kid, especially at 13 years old, playing basketball, football, baseball, the whole nine yards. It's like, whoa, there's a lot of, there's something else out there. So it kind of like, you know, went through the whole process. I remember, like, them talking about insurance and getting buildings and how they would book, like, they would suggest, you know, you book singles matches as opposed to tag matches because tag matches would cost you more because you have to pay two guys as opposed to one and stuff like that.
So was it more about, like, promoting or was it...
It was just kind of, like, bullet points of how you go about becoming a professional wrestler and how the show was kind of worked.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Now, did this, like, blow your mind, like, at that age? Like, whoa, it's... it's not real, or you know what I mean? Like, it's not 100% what you see on TV, or.
But you know, I think you know, even at that age, you know, you've probably been in a scuffle or two, whether you know, pulling hair, or you know, on the playground.
Yeah.
You know, it's like okay, that you know, you see something, it's like okay, that's not really physically possible in a real fight. You know,
I have a funny story about that. I was in, like, second or third grade, and this bully was just picking on me, and finally, we were gonna have, like, the big showdown, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And now, from my perspective, he beat the holy crap out of me, but I kept, like, trying to hulk up, you know what I mean?
Sure,
so, like,
sure.
I would, like, you know, shake and all that stuff and right. Go crazy, and then he'd, like, punch me and I'd fall. But if you asked anybody who was there watching that fight, I won. Even though I didn't throw a punch, I just kept hulking up. And finally, I don't know if he was like just tired or I freaked him out. But that's my little hulking up story, and that just reminded me of that. So.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's worked for Hulk Hogan for 30 years. So. Yeah.
And a naked Gary the Freak just walked in the room. He's not naked, but. He's pretty close. He's wearing a jock strap. It's
yeah.
A lot of weird stuff goes on in the wrestling locker rooms.
Absolutely.
Yes. So you know, you're growing up. Was there ever that catalyst where it became something that you wanted to do to something that you needed to do? Like it was just, you know, I need to do this.
I think for the longest time, right, the match that really, like, you know, really drove me into being, like, a really hardcore fan and, like, really, like, wow, I can really do this was Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect, SummerSlam 91, I think it was.
Yeah,
when Bret won the Intercontinental title for the first time. And then it's, like, you know, Bret and Shawn, or not Shawn, but Mr. Perfect, they weren't the biggest dudes in the world, you know, and I kind of knew by that point that my genetics, I wasn't going to be Hulk Hogan or Andre the Giant or anything like that, so it's like, huh. And they wrestle more athletic style too, which was, you know, more up my alley. Like if we're talking about the, you know, Spider-Man and the superheroes and stuff.
Yeah, like you're not gonna be out there like, you know, body slamming 500-pound guys, but you can fly. So.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like I can do a flying clothesline, you know, I can do a perfect plex, you know. But I think, you know, for years it's just always kind of that thing, you know, it's you kind of have that thing pushed into you, you know, go to school, have a family, you know, 2.5 kids, the white picket fence and stuff, and kind of, you know, it's like, I really want to do it, but, you know, for some reason I cared what people thought of me at that time and didn't, you know, care what was important to me, I guess.
Yeah, well, a lot of people that age do, you know.
No, sure.
Mean?
You know, that kind of lingered with me for quite a while, actually. And it wasn't until I was 25, actually, I started a little bit late, not too late, I guess. You know, I'm still a fairly young man, but I guess 25.
I would have never guessed you were older than 25.
Yeah, actually, I'm quite young looking, I guess. That's what everyone tells me. I tell them 31 going on 32, and they're like, really?
Yeah, I bet you still, like, I would have never known that until you just said it.
So. Oh, yeah, I've been 25 for 5 years. And
Hey, there you go. Perfect.
Right. But, you
You're
know...
be a middle-aged man picking up them college girls, you know?
That's right. That's a dream, isn't it?
Right?
But, you know, I gave it the old college try. I went to school and whatnot. And just, like, I was living up here in Marquette, and I was just kind of miserable about stuff. And I said, you know, what the hell with it? This is what I want to do. It was never a phase because, you know, especially with the internet exploding the way it did in YouTube, you know, I got to see all the independent wrestling I used to read about.
Yeah, for sure.
And it was just like, you know what? The hell with it. I'm going to become a professional wrestler, and the hell what anyone else thinks. So.
There you go. That's awesome. That's the way to do it, too, man. Like, everybody, you know, you're never going to do this. You're never going to do this. Man, the best way is just to go out there and prove them wrong, so.
Oh, yeah, man. And the thing is, too, you know, there's still people, oh, you're not going to make it to WWE? Probably not. You know, I'm not necessarily the biggest guy in the world, but you never know. I mean, there's always a chance, and I do believe I can. I have the ability, but if I don't, you know, I've had the opportunities to, you know, do something and have some marginal success, at least in my eyes. You know, I've reached goals. Like, before that, before I got into wrestling, I wouldn't even say I was a goal-oriented person. You know, I went to school because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
It was never really my goal to go to school and go and work in heating and ventilation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you didn't see that life for yourself.
No. But that it's a good job, and, you know, this, that, the other thing, and whatever. And it's like, no. So I just was kind of going with the flow of things. And in wrestling, you start setting goals for yourself. You start reaching these goals. Like, oh, wow. You know, I consider that success, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and people look at it like, oh, you're not on TV. It's like, well, so what? I've gone, you know, before I got into wrestling, I've been to five states, actually. So the summer before, I went down to Tennessee. But before that, I've been to Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. And I live on the border of Wisconsin, so.
Yeah.
And wrestling, I have gotten to travel and see a lot more of the country than I probably would have working a regular job, that's for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. And you know what? I always, because I know a lot of people who like a lot of various different bands and stuff like that. And people always, you know, say that to me, oh, well, you're not on TV or you haven't done this. And I'm like, well, yeah, but your favorite band isn't on MTV. You know what I mean? Or, no, like, sure. You know, they might not necessarily play your favorite band on the radio. You know, it doesn't mean we're not out there working hard or anything like that. If anything, we're trying to work twice as hard to bring in the people because, you know, we don't have that luxury of being on TV every week. We have to, you know, go a lot off of word of mouth and flyering and internet. So.
No, sure. And even compared to most entertainment businesses, like music, for example, who doesn't like music?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like if you see music, you know, you go to a bar or whatever, you go watch a band play, hey, they're pretty good. They'll go buy a $5 CD just because it's music and it might be in the genre that you like. If it's not even the genre you like, you might see something like, oh, I like that.
Yeah.
You know? Wrestling's definitely the red-headed stepchild of all entertainment.
Yeah,
businesses.
Oh, absolutely.
There's no question about it.
Now, how did you get into the wrestling business?
I went to Dan Severn's Michigan Sports Camps in Coldwater, Michigan. At the time, you know, I had a few kind of inklings. Like, I went to a few indie shows and learned how to kind of how to bump and, you know, do certain things.
Like,
you know?
Certain guys were showing you some stuff.
Yeah. But it was, like, you know, it was very fly by night. You know, go call them like a couple days after and like never hear from again.
Yeah.
You know, and then talk to other people I met at the shows and they never would return an email or anything like that. So just like, all right, Severn's place is there. I've seen guys. There's guys who are going around indies doing some pretty cool stuff. So that's clearly a place I think I want to be, and they run full time. So.
There you go.
I'm going.
Now, were you still living up here, or did you pack up and move to go to the wrestling
school? I was living in Marquette, and I'm trying to think. It was around, I think I started talking to him around October, and then saved up a little money, you know, sent them some deposit money, this, that, the other thing, and then packed up my stuff, moved some of my stuff to my aunt's house, and then hopped on a bus and drove and rode to Battle Creek, and Dan Severn picked me up there and moved into the building.
Yeah. And the rest is how they say history.
Yes.
Now, what was training with Dan like? Because I've heard like he's really old school, and, you know, he'll run you through the ringer and all of that good stuff. So
Dan really didn't really train me, actually. And there's a few times, and he was very old school. As in, he would, you know, show you just basic stuff, you know. I mean, there's even a point where I was like down there and I've been there for 2 years. I had graduated and he was running us through like lockups to hammer locks, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, I'm a little past this now. But most of my training came from Josh Abercrombie, Josh Raymond.
Yes.
I guess most notable for Ring of Honor and Wrestling Society X.
Yeah, yeah.
And IWA Mid-South and what have you. And Josh is the one who, you know, was like my number one trader. Him and CJ Otis, who spent some time in the All Japan Dojo as well. But Josh was like my number one trainer. He's the guy who, really to this day, you know, it's like I see a lot of guys, the way they get trained now, and I'm just like, wow. I was very fortunate. I met a guy who was young, who was good, and actually
took the time out to want to help.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we also knowing the little things that actually count and actually make a wrestling match good. Because you can do all the moves in the world.
Yeah, but nobody will remember that. Eric always taught me, Eric Freedom, it's like, you know, you can go out there and do a million moves, but it's what you do in between that everybody will remember.
No, exactly, man. I mean, just, you know, I...
We're being interrupted.
Yes, by a trainee. Go walk on the mats.
I was going to go and get a drink.
I don't care. All around.
Poor guy. I feel bad.
I don't, because I got treated the same way. Actually, my first road trip to an IWA Mid-South show with Josh Abercrombie, Keith Cream, CJ Otis, and Jack Thriller. They made me take shots of whiskey as I drove to Chicago.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. As you were driving.
Yeah, yeah. I had a suspended license, too, by the way.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. So, the thing is, you know, you got to be hard on the new guys. You got to see who's going to have the gusto to...
Weeding out.
Yeah. And if you can't take a little ribbing, you can't take some insults, then you really shouldn't be in this business, because that's kind of your job anyways.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, so fast forwarding a little bit, you know, you trained and you were there and you were working for a while. Like, you know, from then to now, have you ever had one of those kind of, you know, have you ever had that moment? I almost call them like the WrestleMania moment, but, you know, you're just like either looking
first
around.
First time you feel it.
Yeah, like you're like, no, like just you're looking around the ring, or you know, you're looking at the crowd and you're like, man, I can't believe I'm here. I can't believe this is me right now. You know, one of those kind of moments.
Yeah, I would say that when I wrestled Rhino the first time, because he was like the first like real, I guess, you know, in our business, you know, famous guy.
Yeah,
the name. You know, I had wrestled Petey Williams, you know, right after he got out of TNA, which was cool, but no, nothing against Petey, because he's phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, it's TNA. He was only, like, the X Division champion. He, you know, he only had a certain level of star power, I guess you can say. And then I wrestled Zach Gowen a couple times. You know, he had his cup of coffees in the big leagues and whatnot, too. But I also lived with Zach on and off, and you know, he was my buddy, so it wasn't like a big deal.
Yeah,
you know, and like meeting Rhino, I was quite intimidated. So,
and then you find out he's like the nicest dude,
right? He is nothing, especially those old ECWs where he's dropping F bombs. Yeah, right.
I'm gonna rip off your head and shoot down your neck. And
yeah, and fuck this, fuck that, blah, 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 fucking. And then, like, the guy, like, he barely swear. He talk. It's funny because the guy, you know, he drops all these curse words and stuff, and the guy, he's like, oh, he probably is not that great of a talker because, you know, he doesn't use very long monosyllabic, polysyllabic words. But then you meet him, and he doesn't ever shut up.
Yeah. And he's very articulate.
Oh, very, very, very articulate. Yeah.
So wrestling Rhino, you know, you're just, that's kind of like one of those, man, this is really me right now, kind of.
Yeah, oh yeah, totally. It's like, wow, this is the guy I've been watching since 1998, 99, the first ECW, and, you know, and like when he's in WWE and the invasion stuff, and the first, I still remember the first time Paul Heyman called a gore, gore, gore.
Yeah.
He did it to The Rock, and The Rock did his overdramatic bump where he fucking, you know, kicks up his leg like 15 high and does like a handstand.
Yeah.
But it looks so awesome. It was like the first time Paul E, you know, started yelling, gar, gar, gar. And it was just like, wow. And
now, when did he do that to you? And if so, were you thinking that in your head?
Yeah, a little bit too. And I guess, you know, from the feedback I got from the boys in the locker room, I did it justice too, so yay me.
There you go.
Yeah, because they said it looked like I got murdered, and well, I did a little bit, I guess. It wasn't like, I hate to break this, the move wasn't horrible, but like the shoulder bone right here, like just above your like your deltoid.
Yeah.
Like connected directly on my sternum.
No.
And like it didn't knock the wind out of me, but it was just kind of like,
Yeah.
And then like I remember I was at work the next day and I was cleaning out this booth and I had to reach down to get this Cheeto out of a nook in the corner or whatever. Like I laid down on it. It was just like the most god awful thing ever. It's like, oh god.
So he did murder you.
Yeah. It wasn't so much when it happened. Just the
following
days. Yeah. It kind of sucks.
That's awesome. So where does Brian Skyline, you know, go from here? Like, you know, been doing this for a while, and what do you hope to accomplish in the future? Like, you know, any of the big feds or?
I would love to work for CZW. I would love to work for Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate USA. You know, all the indie companies have notoriety. I want to travel overseas, you know, and over Japan and Europe and, you know, learn those styles and whatnot. Even, you know, just going down to Tennessee and, you know, working that Memphis style, you know, 6 days a week and, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, I just, you know, just getting a tour of anywhere would be great where I can, you know, not just be a weekend warrior where I, you know, wake up Monday, go to the show, go to the next town, go to the next town, have a day off, go to the next town, go to the next town, have a day off. I mean,
well, you hear that, ladies and gentlemen. Brian Skyline is accepting bookings worldwide.
Yes. And I'm actually pretty cheap, too, so.
Hey, that's a plus.
Hot dog and a handshake and put a roof over my head and make sure I have gas money to get home.
Hey, there you go. What more could a... And that's another thing. A lot of... I see it with some young guys, too, you know. Like, they want the entire world. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they don't understand, like, you know, a lot of us are barely making gas money, you know, if not taking a financial hit. And then once they realize that, then I think they kind of lose their luster.
Sure. Well, you know, it's not even... That's definitely true with the young guys. They realize it's not as glamorous as it seems.
Yeah.
But, you know, even for, you know, guys who are at a level of... where we're at and the level of shows we're at, you know, I mean, it's not like we have like the CZW or ROH, you know, come see CZW Star, Brand Skyline, ROH Star, John Campbell. We don't have that.
No,
we're just, you know,
we
can't say come see PWR Star because this is only our third show. Yeah. So no one really knows about it.
It's a hustle.
Oh yeah,
it's
totally
really a hustle.
But you know, it's not even that too. I mean, there's guys who are at our level who, you know, God bless them, but, you know, dealing with some, you know, booking guys and stuff, you know, it's like, how do you have the nerve to even ask for that much money?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, who the hell are you? And, you know, like, even some of my friends, I'm not going to say their names, but, you know, I try to get them booked on this show, and, like, it's like, dude, I wouldn't ask that from you. Why are you asking that from me? And not to really rag on everybody, but you're, as far as in the ring and whatnot, you're not as good as me. I mean, you're my friend. He was a great character. He does his stuff well in what he does, but it's like you can't keep up with me, man. I wouldn't ask you for that.
You people at home, he's talking about me right now, and I guess this is his way of telling me I'm getting a pay cut.
Yeah, sorry, man. The draw was pretty bad last time. That $50 we gave you, and I might have to cut that down.
Oh, shit. I'll hitchhike home.
Yeah, right. There's a bus station about 2 miles down.
Yeah.
You might be able to get something.
I'm sure my car will, you know, I'll figure that out later.
Yeah, sure. Don't worry, it'll be like $400 to get a towed.
Yeah, right. Before we finish out, I just have a couple more questions.
Sure.
Any good road stories, other than the taking the shots on the way to the show while you're driving? Like, any good road stories you can share with us?
Let's see here. The only thing is, some road stories, they're more funny to us than they would be to anybody else.
Oh, that's fine. And if you have to, you can say, like, you know, wrestler A, wrestler B to protect the innocent.
Well, no. There's
not so innocent.
There's not so much, you know, even with shenanigans went down. Like, I remember for a particular time, we're down at Insanity Pro Wrestling down in Indianapolis. When we had Revolucha in Detroit the next day. And we went because we were It was me, Sean Tyler, and Joseph Schwartz.
I miss Sean Tyler.
I do. I see his name bounce around here and again, but I haven't seen him. I know he's had a kid and whatnot, too.
Yeah, and Joseph Schwartz as well.
Yeah, he actually just moved back downstate, actually.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, he's just out east there for a while. But we're down in Sandy Pro in Indianapolis, and we went, because we're trying to break into the company, we went to the after shenanigans, you know, the mingle, politics, whatever you want, however you want to put it.
Yeah.
And we didn't leave in there till, God, 1, 2 in the morning, and it was a 6-hour drive to Detroit. And the show started at 11 the next day, so imagine how much sleep we got that night.
Yeah, not very minimal.
But anyways, we're somewhere downstate Michigan, and we're riding on delirium, and I will say that, you know, me and Joseph, we like to partake in the medicinal activities of, that Michigan offers us.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and
we'll leave it at that.
Yes. So protecting the innocent, because you're not going to know our real names.
Yeah, no, not at all.
But anywho, we're driving, and it was like 6, 7 in the morning or something. We're on the home stretch, and we're driving side by side on the highway with this truck, and all we can see is this guy's arm and this dog's head. And it looked like the dog was driving. And we're so, like, tired and, you know, stoned up. It was just the funniest thing. We kept passing it, letting it pass us, passing it again, and it was just ridiculous. We did it for a good 15 minutes, and to this day, like, you know, I talked to those guys, and, hey, dog driving car. You know, no one would, you know, you might be appreciated more because, you know, you probably had situations like that, too,
absolutely.
You know, but stuff like that is just ridiculous. And then just recently we're out in North Dakota, and we get done the show, and we have a 20-hour drive to Cleveland the next day. Actually, that full day, I suppose, and it's 20 hours. We stopped at Burger King, grabbed some stuff on the dollar menu, and they had us pull up front, and it's taking forever to get our food. And with one of the guys, someone mentioned something about, I dare Kaz Carter, to I dare you to go in there and do the Ryback, you know, feed me more. And he's like, tell me I won't do it. I mean, TW3, who was one of my regular riding partners, we just looked at each other. You won't do it. And he goes in there, and he puts on this, like, mask that has, like, this bone and, like, little metal spikes sticking out of that covers just up his nose and his mouth.
And for those at home, Kaz Carter is not a small man.
No, he is about, he's about 5'11", about 285, black man. So he comes in with this mask, and he starts doing the Ryback, and we can't hear him, but we can see him, and just the faces on the people in there. There's even one, you've seen this guy and this girl walk out, and this guy kind of, like, did a double take just making sure they were getting mugged or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, they might have thought they were getting robbed.
No, the employees, I think they saw us and waiting out there and saw him come around and whatnot, so they didn't freak out, but that the people in there didn't see him and what's going on. So, you know, stuff like that, I mean, just stupid, it's funny that no one but us, but it helps pass the time.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. You have to, or else you'll go crazy.
Oh, yeah, and especially, you know, that would also part of that story, like I said, we had a 20-hour ride to Cleveland, and, you know, stuff like that that made the trip, you know, worthwhile, especially since our show got canceled at 1:30 in the afternoon that day.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, and the 8-hour return home trip was not too welcome, so.
Well, at least you made it back in one piece, and you have a good road story out.
Yeah, you know, it's an experience, you know, it's that I'd never been to North Dakota in my life, and I got to wrestle there, and I got to see the Badlands, and I got to see parts of the country I didn't get to.
That's awesome.
And, you know, our gas and stuff was covered, we ate, and we eventually slept, too. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, and that's the most you can hope for, you know, if your gas is covered, if you can, you know, scrape up some money to eat, then, you know, you're good.
Yeah.
You know.
I get to do what I love. Shit.
Absolutely. Now, where can people find Brian Skyline on the worldwide internets?
You can go to www.facebook.com/Brian Skyline Bookings. That's Brian with a Y. YouTube.com/Bry Skyline, B-R-Y, Skyline. And Twitter, Brian Skyline.
Awesome.
At Brian Skyline, I should say, is Twitter. So.
And you can find me at facebook.com/JohnCampbellX, at Twitter, at GJohnCampbell. right here on the podcast at gentlemanjohncampbell.podomatic.com. Also broadcasting on thebradyhicks.com. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/KWOasylum. And feel free to check Brian Skyline out. He does a lot of good work, and he's accepting bookings worldwide. And I want to thank you for being on here, and it was a great interview. Thanks, man.
Yep.